This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. One of the goals of the Affordable Care Act is to get control of medical costs. The law expands Medicaid coverage to include the poorest of the poor. And by doing so, the federal government was able to cut aid to hospitals that had been treating uninsured patients. But North Carolina rejected Medicaid expansion, and that meant the loss of tens of millions of dollars, and it meant that hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians would remain without health care coverage. Now hospitals, like those in the Duke University health system, face the consequences. Victor Zhao is head of the Duke University health system. He's going to have to navigate the changing terrain of medicine as the Affordable Care Act goes into effect, and he joins us now. Welcome, Victor Zhao. Good to have you here.
Great to be here, Frank.
Tell us about the Affordable Care Act and these changes. What is that going to mean for the Duke hospitals?
From my perspective, of course, as a provider, as a physician, my biggest concern is the health of our citizens and how do we make sure we provide health care. So the concern we all have in not expanding Medicaid is that we were not able to cover the some 500,000 people who would be eligible for Medicaid, and therefore they remain, quote, uninsured. Now, of that, about a third would be eligible through the subsidy program, so about two-thirds will remain to be uninsured. So that is the critical issue for me is, for somebody who loves North Carolina and cares about it, is how would we make sure we provide health care to those individuals?
And you're going to have to do it the way you had been doing it, which is to provide it either on a sliding scale or perhaps at no cost at all to the patient. Now, there had been federal subsidies of a sort that were available because not as many people would have been covered under Medicaid.
Right.
Government says, okay, we're going to expand eligibility. Mm-hmm. More people are on Medicaid. Therefore, we don't have to give hospitals this subsidy anymore.
Yeah.
They cut that, but then in this state, we didn't expand Medicaid. How are you going to cover the cost? What's it?
Yeah.
Have you figured out what the cost is going to be and how are you going to do it?
Now, as somebody who runs a health system, which is about a $3 billion health system, not counting the research side, obviously I have to make sure that I provide the care and balance my budget. So it does create additional tension for us. So as you know, there's a mechanism called DSH, disproportionate share, that we get as a way to offset the costs of hospitals that provide a lot of charity care or, uninsured, et cetera. And that will eventually go away. We're seeing progressive shrinkage. And if we actually go to totally managed care for Medicaid, unless you get a waiver from CMS, that will go away. So the pressure is high on all of us to how to provide the care to patients with a diminishing amount of support. But I still return to the fact that if we provide care for the patient in the community and we have ways to prevent complications, we have early diagnosis, et cetera, that's the best way to reduce cost of care.
And some of those needs were going unmet anyway, and now you're going to have, I guess, expanded responsibilities.
That's
now,
right.
That'll go on. Well, look, here's what the legislature and the governor have said. They said, we don't want to expand this program that is already broken. There are cost overruns. It's completely out of control in this state. Costs are going up every year. Why would, if some is bad, more is worse, we're not going to expand this? I mean, what about the logic in that? They're saying, look, we shouldn't make a bad problem even worse by expanding it. That's the logic.
Well, that clearly is from a fiscal perspective. I mean, they have a point to make. We can't take on more losses. From a patient perspective, that's quite a different issue, right? And so I keep coming back to the importance of thinking about the patient or the community. And in fact, my argument will be that eventually you actually will have less cost than more cost. But I think the question is going to be what the governor appropriately calls fiscal or budget predictability, right? How do we create a predictable budget? I think we all have to take a piece of this, responsibility. And certainly from my perspective, Duke, and I know my peers across the state who run medical centers and others are all quite ready to say, let us all step up to the plate and find a way to do this. I think a lot of discussion right now going on, and the governor, in fact, had a meeting last week, which I participated, is whether the whole idea of bringing managed care to run the statewide versus perhaps we ought to get providers like ourselves more engaged in finding ways to take risk and drive from volume to value, they say, right? And I think that's a good direction. And to really focus on not only not a statewide, but have different regions. By the way, this is the governor and DHS Secretary Voss's discussion with us. It's not my idea, but it's what they put forth. And I think we're going the right direction. And importantly, if you think about where the most expenditures are, behavioral health, mental health, developmental and both physical and intellectual development problems, long-term care, that burns a lot of the dollars. And we need to really learn how to manage those and manage those populations who are particularly vulnerable.
How do you do that given the way the healthcare system is set up, the role of insurance providers, healthcare providers, patients, lifestyle, all of that together? It seems to me, and others have said, that the incentives are in all the wrong places. There is no incentive for wellness. Nobody makes a dollar when a patient gets better. The incentives are all on procedures and delivering procedures, or if you're an insurance company, keeping procedures from happening, denying service,
right,
in a sense.
Right.
They're all in the wrong. None of them seem to be about getting better or being healthy.
Well, there's no question that the big challenge we have is one that relates to payment and policy, right? I mean, after all, I would still argue that Affordable Care Act tries to do that. They have lots of elements that begin to get into prevention, et cetera. And we all know the challenges facing at the beginnings of it. But I do think that we have to begin to redo the way we do things and incentivize, whether it's, you know, physicians, nurses, or patients, to take care of themselves and to do prevention. So in that context, I would say I am encouraged that the journey has begun. I mean, you know, if you try to dial back 5 years ago, I don't think anybody would be having this conversation, and doctors are going to continue to do fee-for-service, and we're going to do, you know, most procedures, whatever. I think that right now there's a whole awareness of the entire nation that things cannot continue to be the same way, no matter how clunky and difficult it is, right?
How would it look? What would it mean to incentivize wellness, to say if a patient went from being not well to better, that's when you get paid? The bonus is for an outcome, and right now there is no way to pay for it. Sure, I did that in one sentence. What does it look like in policy? How does it look like? What does that look like on your bill?
I think to begin with, there is this discussion and clear direction towards what they call population health, right? That's an outcomes-based, not fee-for-service-based approach. The far end of which would be, we're going to only pay you if you reach certain, you know, metrics of population. I think getting there will be in many, many different steps, which are already happening, some of which, as you know, includes readmission for, you know, after you have a heart attack, you get discharged, you get readmitted 30 days, you know, sooner, then you actually get a penalty rather than get paid more, right? Or in hospital-acquired infection and more extending into the community. It's the right journey. But what you're saying is even more important, which is how do you actually look at the reduction in utilization of hospitals and cost? That, I believe, is a measurement of how good your prevention program and how good your management programs are. So that would be another way to do it. But I think what you're going, which I agree, is you ought to even pay people to do more prevention. You know, we all know that the healthcare area is moving towards consumerism, right? Because people have to pay more from deductibles out of pocket. And now with even health exchange or tiering of hospitals by private insurers, more and more people are going to be more aware of what they have to pay. I think that's another way to look at it. In other words, you know, people have to take ownership for their own health. We as providers have to take ownership for making them healthier because we recognize that, and drive down the cost because we recognize that people are going to be much smarter consumers, because the days where somebody else is going to pay for my health are kind of, you know, changing, shall we say, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we began this conversation by talking about taking on indigent patients, the federal subsidies that will be lost now. But despite the fact that two out of three of your hospitals are labeled as disproportionate share hospitals, that is, take on more than their share of indigent patients and receive subsidies for that care. There was an article in the NNO last year that singled out Duke and the healthcare system as being overly concerned about profits. The NNO said Duke's total profit was $500 million in 2011. It said Duke inflates prices on drugs and procedures, sometimes up to 10 times what it costs, and said North Carolina hospital costs are more than 10% higher than the national average.
Yeah. I love newspapers, don't you?
I do. It's fact. I read them, and
You know, the question always is, you know, what's fact and what's, shall we say, a little bit of stretching. So let's talk about the core profit. We're a not-for-profit hospital. We don't make profits. What we do is we do have operating income, and then we plow it back into our patients and for mission. And the $500 million is way overstated because they include our investment income. As you know, as a university, we have endowments. So when we do have the dollars, we put it into investment, and investment come back, and we put them as part of our balance sheet, which we use to build buildings, to make care better for our patients. All those things are not easily measured by those kind of grand statements, if you will. So if they want to catch people's attention, I guess they did. But they know that, in fact, these things are, you know, not grounded in the detail of what it really means. I say that we care a lot about cost at Duke, and in fact, we have initiatives to reduce the cost of care at Duke in a grand way. The last few years, we already took out $160 million of expenses, and going forward, I won't be able to share with you the number, but we're talking about large numbers. Why? Because we're very sensitive to this issue. After all, we're there to take care of patients and not making profits. The dollars that we do have a margin, we plow back into just, you know, come visit us. If you take a look at Duke Cancer Center, the new medical pavilion, they for patients. We don't charge people an extra cent because we build a new building. And because we don't say because you can't pay, you will not be admitted. We open up for everybody. But what we're recognizing is medicine or healthcare is more than giving drugs and more than making diagnoses. It's about a healing environment. You know, imagine that. I'm sure you all seen One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest and all this horrific situation. What we want people to feel is when they come to Duke, they feel at home. There's care. So we do have to upgrade the facilities. We also have to put money into information technology, electronic health record. We just can't roll it all out. It's all for patient care. And we do all those things so that patients can access the information. They can be anywhere in the Duke system and have the record ready and whole bit. These take huge money. Just the electronic record alone, Epic, not talk about operation, implement is $500 million, right? So the only way that in this, I guess we would call this market-driven, you know, economy is we got to make the margin in order to be able to reinvest to make us better and better. That's what we're here for. So back to your original question, what do we do with the patient who have no insurance? We take care of that patient. What do you do with the patient who's Medicaid, where they pay us 60, 70 cents on the dollar? We take care of that patient.
You know, Duke Systems, of course, has, and I know you do know, that there's a hospital, obviously, in Wake County and in Raleigh, but that is not considered a disproportionate share hospital. That is, it doesn't take more than its share. And, in fact, Wake Med does have that distinction. It's a federal distinction. Mm-hmm. So is Duke University Health System doing enough in Wake County?
Yeah, good, very good question. We have the smallest hospital, as you know, compared to Wake Med and Rex. So by numbers, we're never going to be able to come up with the numbers they have. And of course, just like our Duke Regional Hospital in the Durham is a county hospital, Wake Med has its roots as a county hospital. So, you know, they will see more of that. We are prepared to see anybody that comes. We'd never say no to any of the patients that come through our door. It's a very small hospital. It's only got 100-some beds versus, you know, 400 or 500 beds of the other hospitals, right? So I think that if we have the opportunity to expand more in Wake, we'll undoubtedly, you have my word, we're going to take our share, as we have demonstrated in Durham, for caring for our community, caring for, you know, as you know, we do lots of things in Durham in providing access to care, you know, free clinics, et cetera, and we will do the same in Wake.
One of the frustrations that many patients have, and again, I think this gets back to the incentives and the kind of mechanisms, the trigger mechanisms for even providing costs, the kind of supply and demand mechanism, would seem to be disabled. One thing we can't do ever is compare costs. And when the newspaper did it again, Duke's costs for the same procedure were much higher than other hospitals in the state. At the very least, it suggests that it's hard to get a handle on these costs, that they're not the same. Why aren't procedures, why can't we call the hospital and say, what's it going to cost me for a knee?
You're so right. We want to make our organization transparent. And by that, I not only mean these numbers. How will we even make decisions in terms of employees, promotions of faculty, et cetera? So you're quite right. Those are very important issues, and we're going to try to be as transparent. It'll take a journey. You know, people are always nervous about looking at each other's data. My feeling is our physicians and our staff only get better if they know how much each other cost and how well they do, because everybody's compared, want to do better. You know, you never see the whole picture. We have things which are less expensive than the others, but you only pick the ones which are more. We do take care of a lot more complicated patients. We do things that, you know, we're the number one lung transplant, you know, in the country, number two in heart transplant. Nobody else is coming close here. We do things like what they call percutaneous aortic valve replacement. You can replace a valve without opening up the chest. We do things like ventricular assist device for bridge to transplant. We have more expensive teaching and things like that. But we're working really hard to bring it down to as close community. But I take it very close, like when we go and buy a car, are you buying a Mercedes or are you buying a Toyota? So you can't simply say cost alone. You got to look at what else, what quality. And we are committed really to give the highest quality for the best possible cost.
Dr. Zhao, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Victor Zhao is the head of the Duke University Health System. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. You can find us on stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Nguyen. Bryson Russell is the intern. Robin Copley, our technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.